Comic-Con week. This is the second episode of the Sparkcast. Let's hope this is the second episode of the Sparkcast you're hearing this week. If not, the first one, something went horribly awry and it never made its way to your ear holes. We're back once again. This is probably coming out Saturday night, Saturday evening, Saturday afternoon, somewhere around that time period after the Saturday afternoon Halo 4 panel at San Diego Comic-Con. This is for those folks who couldn't attend. We've decided to give you a kind of an earful of some of the information we're talking about for those in attendance. Quick introductions and we'll get into it. I'm, of course, David Ellis. I'm a designer here at 343 Industries. And joining me clockwise, working my way around all the way back to me, is Frank O'Connor, Franchise Development Director at 343.
Oh, you said clockwise.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yes, keeping it classy, already. Mr. Frank O'Connor. Right next to him is Mr. Greg Murphy, a.k.a. G-Moo, who is a fellow designer on Spartan Ops crew here at 343. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me.
If he sounds really comfortable, it's because this is the second time he's been on a podcast here, but it's the first time you've actually heard because the last one got eaten by my laptop. joining him as a lead Spartan Ops designer, Chris Aluke. And rounding things out, and he's texting currently, but I can still introduce him, is Mr. Josh Holmes, Franchise Creative Director at 343 Industries.
Hi there.
Josh is texting me.
Yeah. We're having our own secret podcast.
You guys just shattered the lame meter.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm inviting ladies to our VIP party on Friday.
Nice.
By ladies, I mean people we work with who should be invited.
By Friday, you mean in the past.
That's true. You mean last night.
I was trying to make last Friday night sound sexy.
What a crazy party that was last night, right?
Yeah, I can barely stand.
Whoa! For the fifth year in a row, and I bumped into Thomas Jane outside our party at Comic-Con. True story. It's happened 4 years in a row. I'm going to make it five this year. So the reason we're getting this particular crew together is we actually want to talk a little bit about more about Spartan Ops, which is, of course, the new cooperative campaign mode, which we... talked about a little bit with Game Informer earlier this year with that cover story, if you saw that, but went into a little bit more detail and actually people got a chance to play it. Some select folks got a chance to play it this year at E3 in Los Angeles. This weekend at Comic-Con, those lucky enough in attendance will have already been playing it here on Saturday and then tomorrow, Sunday of the show. So it's exciting to be able to see feedback from people who are in the enthusiast press. It's just fans out there playing it. It's always a lot of fun, but we want to talk a little bit about Spartan Ops and the history, how it works, and maybe answer some questions you didn't think to ask. So we wanted to talk a little bit about the history of Spartan Ops in this mode and how it came about, which is one of the reasons G-Moo is here, and of course Frank as well. And you got some old-timers around here who were here back in the old days. Frank is blinking at me furiously, didn't like that descriptor at all. But... how did Spartan Ops, how did we get to where Spartan Ops is mode that's shipping with Halo 4? How did it all kick off? Because it's an interesting idea. Halo, of course, has had co-op and campaign before. It had Firefight, which was sort of an extension of that without really any narrative hooks or anything. How did we get to Spartan Ops?
Well, early on in the project, we really wanted to accomplish, I don't know if it was even so much another mode, but what we really wanted to do was provide a way for players that mainly play single player or want to play co-op, that they could continue their experience long after the game had shipped. They played campaign and you love it and you love playing with your friends and you want to keep going. So we thought, wow, what could we do for those players? What can we do to help introduce those players to PvP? What can we do? And so we started off with a bunch of different iterations of how we could provide, you know, more content. You know, do we change single player? Do we... how could we mix it up? And we thought, well, you know, if we provide these missions, like if we provide this mode where you can get together with your friends, you get together by yourself, and you could
how do you
come
get
back every
by
week.
Yourself, G-Moo? I mean, I know I've done
it. I do it every day.
I just want you to explain it to the kids.
It's a special...
I'm pretty sure that's something
you light
that's
candle,
inherently built
you put on some
everyone.
Steely Dan, yeah, and you just hang out with some incense.
Yeah. Sometimes you need to gather yourself and collect your thoughts. And
I collected the crap out of them. I was, like Pokemons. Yeah. Caught them all.
Gotta go. So provide something that the players could come back to week after week. And we went through a bunch of different iterations of how we could do
some
it.
Some of them were really wacky.
Some of them were pretty wacky. Yeah. And some of them we still have big portions of, particularly as we... have some of the progression that is also in PvP. Like a lot of those ideas came out of it. And, you know, it wound its way, and we had these really cool prototypes and funky prototypes and ways that we want to do it. And we decided that, you know, what players really want, they want some story, they want some context. They just don't, we feel like we don't want people to be playing the same thing again and again and again just for the sake of playing the same thing again and again and again. So what could we do to mix it up and make it different and yet have it change? So we have this idea of progression, you know, this kind of these RPG thing, and that's one aspect of it. But then I can't remember when it was, but we came to this idea of, you know, what if these were really felt like missions? What if these really felt like, hey, every time I come back and play it, I'm progressing a story, I'm continuing on.
You're going to see different stuff.
You're going to see different things.
Depending on what difficulty you're playing on, how many people you're playing with.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, in the beginning, I think it was more thought of as, well, these are sort of side stories. These are things that will take place in the Halo universe, but they don't really touch the mainline story. They don't have a real impact on it. And I don't remember when we kind of made the decision, no, let's actually link everything together.
Yeah, I do. It was because somebody, this is how I remember it, and often I remember things very conveniently for me. But I remember there was somebody said spline during one of the conversations.
Yeah, I remember
the spline.
Yeah.
And like you could just see everyone in the room like suddenly realize like the way to do this isn't to, like, to Josh's point, like just do these piecemeal things, is like just commit to it going forward, right?
Yeah.
And it was make it a linear thing, make it a thing that actually matters. And that was, that's not actually when it happened. Obviously loads of other things happened that fed into that. But that was for me the sort of chronological tipping point, is somebody called it a spline. Yep. And that made me think, yeah, this is a line that just goes through the universe and intersects with these other meaningful parts of the universe.
Yeah, because I mean that was a point at which Infinity was a code name for this concept that the team had been kicking around. But I remember when the spline idea came up, which was this idea that you're constantly moving through this story, through the universe and everything, and then it just sort of manifested into, well, this should be a ship. Yeah. The Infinity should be a ship that's moving through the galaxy, and that's
because we were talking about a journey.
That's interesting. I didn't even know that's a vessel. Yeah. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? We know.
It's weird because it was just this.
When I came on board, both already existed.
Yeah, so some of that was just framing for the ideas that people had, and they just needed it. They literally and allegorically needed a vehicle for it. And the Infinity was sort of, and it just became a ship, like almost instantly, right? Like,
and then we just made it progressively bigger and bigger to support the needs that we had.
Because you were putting a swimming pool in. And,
Well, at one point it didn't, I don't know if it's fair to talk about that, but at one point it didn't have these other cruisers inside, these other frigates. Yeah. And then eventually I was seeing some concept art one day and I see frigates come out. I was like, wait, how big is this thing now?
It's mass large.
Yeah. No, I remember.
3 miles? What?
It's massive. So we're doing this series along with Infinity that's like this ongoing weekly series that tells stories and follows a group of characters on the ship. And I remember working with a director on that series, and we were having this discussion about, like, okay, how do we show that the ship is large? It's your point about the cruisers. Yeah. We were like, talking about like bringing pelicans out of the ship, and then it was like, no, we need to bring like cruisers out of the ship and then pelicans out of the cruiser. And he's like, wait a second, what comes out of the pelican? Like, no,
it's
cool.
Like the Spartans. Russian dolls. Yeah.
And then that's why I invented the Spartan Force.
You will see those frigates come out of the ship, and you're going to see a crap ton of pelicans coming out of the ship.
Oh, yeah. That shot now literally exists in the series, but I mean, I remember having that conversation with him. He's like, how big is this ship?
Jumbo.
It's actually good that you mentioned the CG series, because I think that was one of the questions I think we got most often, because every week, and of course at this point we've talked about the fact that Spartan Ops in this season, we're producing, and this is a question we got pretty often at E3, is like, you're talking about months of content, but how much are you really doing? And you know, we've announced the season is 10 weeks of content. And each week of content is going to exist. You have this episode of the CG animated series, which we're going to talk about a little bit more in a moment, and five brand new missions each week. So we have 10 weeks of content planned. That's 50 missions of content. And a few of us that are working on those missions are still still crying a little bit inside, thinking about the,
I'm wiping my brow right now.
Finishing those up.
Come on.
Those out the door. Chris is confused. He's like, what? You guys said you guys were really far along on these missions. We're in good shape. No, but we want to talk a little bit about the CG animated series and how it ties into these missions, but also how it actually is a standalone, in a lot of ways, standalone fiction that you could just watch on its own if you wanted to, and it would tell a really interesting, compelling story within the Halo universe.
That was something that we definitely wanted to do with the series and the whole concept when we were talking about this was, you know, how do we create a storytelling vehicle that will definitely appeal to fans? And like Timu says, you have kind of two audiences, one audience that maybe really gravitates towards campaign and really loves the storytelling that exists there. And then the other audience that is more focused on the competitive side. So how do you create a storytelling vehicle in a way of knitting that experience together to appeal to both audiences and give them something that will, you know, really draw both of them in. But then in addition to that, you know, could stand on its own and be something that someone who just loves great story and loves sci-fi could enjoy watching this series, even if they're not necessarily playing the game, and could talk to their friends about, yeah, hey, did you see this week's episode of Infinity? And then their friend who's playing the game could be like, yeah, and then I played, you know, this mission and this is what happened in that mission, and have all of that story connect together and tie into one another and make it feel like you as a player are having a direct impact on the series as well.
And we are big fans of series like Lost and serialized content. And we're also sadistic.
I think you mean Game of Thrones.
Yes. That would fall under the serialized content.
Yeah.
We're also sadistic buttholes, so we're going to end a lot of these missions and episodes on, keeping it PG-13.
Keeping it real is what it sounds like.
A sadistic butthole.
He is a sadistic butthole. But we're also, we're going to end a lot of these episodes on cliffhangers to keep you wanting more and coming back the next week. And so one of the things I think we should talk about with the animated series is there was a little bit of confusion coming out of E3 as far as, you know, we put out a press release talking about Majestic and Crimson Squads, yeah, and who you'll be playing as and how that all works into it.
And in fact, you play as neither of those two. You play as Donkey Squad. It's true. No, it's true.
Little known
we
fact.
We just renamed it this week. Yeah.
Josh Squad. Holmes.
Yeah. I'm looking at him because I'm pretty sure he's not serious, but there's always a sliver that he is.
You heard it here first.
You don't play as Donkey Squad.
So you actually play as a member of Crimson Squad, but there's a very important reason, at least I don't know if it's the actual reason, but it's always what I've always assumed, that there's a differentiation between Majestic and Crimson. And for Crimson Squad, just the simple fact is that the progression system carries over between War Games and Spartan Ops. And so we want you to create your own custom Spartan 4 and actually be able to participate and actually have some of your personality bleed through in the types of armor and the armor skins and everything that you do to customize your Spartan. And we want that to actually come through in the actual game. And while at the same time, we want to create this CG series, and that is just not an option when it's related to that. So you have Majestic Squad, which is kind of the core group that we follow throughout the CG linear series. But definitely Crimson Squad is a part of that, and things you do in the missions will absolutely play a role in the plot and moving that forward in helping on the different adventures of the UNSC Infinity.
Yeah, I think even in that kind of context of the spline, those two splines interact many times throughout the series, yeah, throughout gameplay, throughout the linear series. So that's, I think, one of the beauties about that whole storyline that kind of wraps Spartan Ops up.
Yeah, and that point makes everything feel, for very good reasons, because it makes it feel connected and real, and it makes it feel like you're actually having an effect on the universe because you literally are. So when we've done things that are side stories before, it's just, you don't do that.
Yeah.
You don't kill people, you don't move things, you don't break things, you don't change things, and that's all of that old historical legacy of safety is out the window. Like, things happen that actually mean something.
Yeah, there's actually one example in the mission that we showed at E3 and that we're allowing,
playing this week, yeah, at Comic-Con.
At Comic-Con. At the end of that mission, your objective is to retrieve an artifact, and that's, you know, so you have this first week's episode of the series, sets up the characters, sets up the mission on Requiem. You play these five missions. The last mission, you're retrieving this artifact. That artifact then becomes the primary focal point of the next week's episode. And so you really feel like you and your team, your squad,
has had a real impact on that story and brought something into that story and into the universe that has repercussions throughout the series.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we talked about, that we wanted all of this to matter, right? So we wanted the story, what you do in the story matters, right? What you play matters with your RPG, right? And I thought that was a great thing that we wanted to do, that we wanted early on and say, you know, if we're going to do this story, let's not, like Frank said, let's not do a side story. Let's make it matter, right? So that you are progressing the universe.
One of the main characters you're going to be interacting with, of course, is Commander Palmer, who's the head of the Spartan 4 program on the UNSC Infinity. And you'll be interacting with her a lot within the missions, but also, you know, she's helping to progress the story because she's sending you on these missions, but she's also interacting with Majestic. So it's interesting to see this interplay between her and Majestic in the CG series, and then you as Crimson Squad and her in the missions. It's interesting to see how that progresses throughout the series. And in fact, there will be sometimes, maybe within the series, this isn't a big spoiler, but you're actually going to be interacting a little bit with Majestic Squad itself. Yeah. And I think that's fun stuff to be able to do. The more that we can do to kind of draw these tendrils between the CG series to the actual missions you're playing, the interactive missions, that's a lot of fun for me as a designer. And of course, I think players are going to dig that as well.
And then you've got characters like Palmer who connect to the campaign of Halo 4. And so that's where you're first introduced to Palmer. And that's also where you meet Lasky, who's a really important character in the series. And he's also a character that you're introduced to for the first time in Forward Unto Dawn.
Halo
4, Forward Unto Dawn, which we just talked about
twice
at
you're
Comic-Con.
Introduced to him.
Yeah.
And even in the trailer, you're introduced to him twice. So you see young and old Lasky.
Yeah. And so being able to interact with all those characters and taking them between both the CG series and the missions themselves, it's actually been quite a lot of fun in figuring out all the different ways that we can kind of do that stuff. I think there's been a lot of questions as far as we talked a little bit about the missions and people got a chance to see a little bit of a mission 83, of course, play it here at Comic-Con. But we don't want to let too much out of the bag as far as what this season of Spartan Ops has in store for folks. I know that we've shown a little bit of the different types of environments that you're going to be seeing throughout the course of the season, and it's been a lot of fun being able to figure out ways of introducing those environments, but also using them in really unique ways on giving you multiple opportunities to play through these missions and have different things that happen. I think that's one of my favorite things in the campaign. Being able to play through and set up these kind of special goals for yourself to be able to play the game in a different way than you have before. We talked about this a little bit at Comic-Con, but, you know, challenges are coming back. We're not talking about them in detail necessarily and what we have planned, but I think if you've seen what we've done with them over the last year since taking over support for Halo Reach, you probably have a good idea of where we're going with it. But actually using those as well to introduce players and encourage players to play the game in maybe a way that they haven't before, and to extend that kind of experience beyond the campaign, beyond competitive multiplayer, but also even beyond just Spartan Ops.
David talks about a lot of good points there, just in the variety of the missions that are in Spartan Ops and what you'll be doing, which ties into the narrative. So it always goes back and forth between the narrative and what you're actually doing in gameplay, which for us as designers is, that's amazing. It's a lot of fun. It allows us to have a lot of freedom, flexibility with the Halo sandbox, tie it in with the story and the linear. And then it always kind of brings it back around, which is great. It always ties into that spline idea. And I think that's a fantastic element that is tied within Spartan Ops itself.
I think one of the interesting challenges, you guys as a team is, you know, there are these environments that are the site of important missions, and you might have a number of different missions that take place that take you back to this environment. But designing those locations so that you can get, you know, maximum replayability out of a location, so that you can approach it from different directions, you can have, you know, different objectives, you can have different enemies, you can have things set up so that they're oriented towards more ground combat versus vehicle combat. Like, there's so much variety that you're able to get out of the different locations throughout Spartan Ops. But I know that, like, as you're thinking through the creation of these missions.
That actually gives me a chance to do a minor clarification. So when we were at E3, and partly because I'm a retard, It's a French word meaning savant. Definitely I saw reports that were like all the new Spartan Ops environments are created from scratch. So that's not actually true. There's a gigantic, huge, humongous amount of content created from scratch for Spartan Ops for obvious reasons. But the nature of the spline and the nature of the story means that, in fact, you're actually going to go and revisit some places that you've been before. This is why we're being really careful about how we talk about the 6-month difference between Spartan Ops and the Halo 4 campaign. It will become clear when you play Spartan Ops, but there's some places you are going to have to go back to.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to deal with them in a completely different way. And you were talking about challenges, and that reminded me, like, the funny thing about challenges is that's how we used to play video games when we were kids, because you had like Sonic the Hedgehog and you've completed 8 times, like, oh, I'm going to do a speed run.
Or try
and do it without jumping and so
right.
on. So
you're
on.
You were in Europe where the Master System reigned supreme. Here in the US of A, it was Super Mario Brothers.
I had an NES, or as I called it, Le Famicom. That's not even true. I just tried to make it sound more Euro.
The French, you got the French version of the Famicom. That's cosmopolitan.
I think she's thinking you bring up an interesting point, which is the fact that, and we always got a good reaction about this when we were talking about it at E3, is the fact that this is, in a lot of ways, continuing the story of the Halo 4's main
Careful
campaign.
Careful now.
It's 6 months after the campaign, and I got a lot of questions from people asking, so should I finish the campaign before I play Spartan Ops? And I will say, partial Spartan Ops, it's what I'm working on. I love it. But
the answer is yes.
Yeah, I would recommend people to play through the campaign first. Just because there are some things that I think we've been very, especially in the early weeks of content for this season of Spartan Ops, of making sure that we are designing around the possibility that there are going to be people that play through Spartan Ops before they play through the campaign, or at the very least finish the campaign. So the first time that in Spartan Ops you're introduced to Prometheans, it's a big deal because for your Crimson Squad, this is the first time that they've been introduced to Prometheans. So we make a big deal about that just as much as in the campaign.
You cannot make people play the order of stuff that you want them to, or the difficulty.
Oh, yes, we can, because we release the content weekly, and you can play week two.
They can at least play week one.
Yes.
You can't stop that.
No.
People will play it in whatever order they decide.
Yeah, they will.
But the recommendation we would have is that it's best experienced in a particular order.
No, you're right. But put yourself in, like, imagine a tiny little stupid kid who's so young he shouldn't even be playing the game.
But thanks, Mom and Dad, for being irresponsible.
Yeah. We'll make up a name for
Frank.
Him. Like, let's call him
Frank.
Overdose. Right? Like, Overdose wants to play the game. He wants to play in the order he wants to play it. Like, seriously, though, like, week one of Spartan Ops, like, it's going to be way quicker to play Spartan Ops than it would be to play through the campaign.
Absolutely.
Right? So that whatever ADD they got going on, you have to, like, sort of deal with that. So I think Dave makes a really excellent point, is that definitely play campaign first. That's the way to play it, right? Because then you have better background, better context. But if you do play Spartan Ops first, some things will be surprises that are actually supposed to be resonant moments from campaign, and vice versa, I suppose, if you play it in reverse.
I think this is like one of the hardest challenges or things that you struggle with as a creator is that, you want people to experience things in a certain order. You don't want to spoil things for people. And you even get into this when we're looking at, like, what are the things that we can talk about and reveal before launch. And we get into these like crazy debates around, like, well, do we talk about this thing or do we save it? And you can have a tendency, and I'm totally guilty of this, of being kind of overly precious about things and like, no, we want to save it all. We want to save it all. And then ultimately, people get upset because they're like, you're never showing us anything. Yeah. You're never telling us anything. But it is it's a balance, because you don't want to spoil those surprises that you've spent so much time thinking about and honing. So that they have the maximum impact.
Those are definite. That leans towards fiction surprises. This isn't exactly off topic, but I'll give you a little insider baseball for people who get frustrated when we don't tell them things. Like, people are like, is this control scheme final? That's a real example going on now, right? The reason we're not telling you the final answer is because not only is it not final, it can change. And what we don't want to do is commit to things that are definitely up for grabs or mm-hmm. up for change. And so it's a really weird, difficult balance between like PR needs to keep a clear message and we need to be honest and we need to be careful.
And we don't want to send mixed messages and confuse people.
And that's why I guess every game studio does this. This isn't just us. It's not unique to us. That's why we're coy with information. That's why we're reticent because we're going into the last 7 or 8 weeks. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
7 weeks of production before RTX, not M. And the fact is that things will change. Our feature set is fairly complete, but things get tuned and tweaked and altered and shifted and changed as test data, as network data, as all this data keeps coming in, and even as Reflex and Instinct, and that's the toughest part. Like we can tell you what our plan is now, but we can't tell you how that's going to change because it has to be organic. Otherwise, we're not doing it right.
Yeah. And just for the time travelers amongst us, RTX is not a reference to Rooster Teeth Expo. It's
crap.
Yeah, we actually, that is released to certification.
It blew my mind. Yeah.
Which I didn't even know before.
Yeah, released to certification is where we send out and a bunch of scientists look at it and say, yeah, this is going to function. And then RTM is released to manufacture where the scientists have said, yeah, this functions. Now put it on a CD.
Good product.
CD's like a DVD 9 from the 80s.
Thanks for clearing that up.
I think actually what you mentioned there, Frank, is actually a pretty good place to end this tonight. We're not ready to spill too many beans for Spartan Ops because we have a lot of content that's going to be coming out post when we release the game. So we want to keep a lot of that stuff secret so that you have many more surprises to come as we release the game. But I hope that we've answered some questions on how Spartan Ops works and how it sort of is intertwined together. We recognize that it can be a complicated concept to sort of wrap your head around. You have the CG series that ties into the 5 weekly missions, and those are all wrapped together as one episode released each week.
I did want to say one thing before we close,
yeah.
though. And it was something that Jimu, Gregory Murphy, explained or touched on earlier in the conversation, which is that you know, what were we trying to create, what we're trying to invent, what we're trying to innovate with. This is going to be a tough concept. For a player like me, I play probably like 95% of my entire Halo play has been multiplayer. The fact is that statistically, most people play campaign and actually don't
Halo's,
play that much
Halo's
multiplayer.
Pretty unique amongst most other similar games in the genre.
So we're trying to make something to Jimu's point, which is that it's going to be like fantastic fun for those campaign players. But I will add that Spartan Ops, like it's story driven, it's cooperative rather than competitive, but you compete for kills, you compete for points. And in some ways it's weird because it's like an entree for the multiplayer people who don't care about campaign.
And we've talked about
campaign guys get it. They're like, I'm going to love this, but, or whatever. Hopefully, optimistically, that's what they say. But, multiplayer guys who just play multiplayer are like, well, why would I cooperate with someone instead of
and we've talked a little bit about the fact that your progression system is going to carry over between War Games and Spartan Ops,
but that's not a trick to get you to do that.
No,
it is also incredibly fun to compete with people to get kills and save their ass
and it's all about the experience of putting you allowing you to enlist aboard this ship and serve aboard this ship and give you that whole experience. So, I think our hope is that those players who have maybe historically felt a little too intimidated to jump into the ring with others in competitive multiplayer will kind of pick up the skills they need to survive within Spartan Ops and feel like the things that they're the things that they're learning as well as the things that they're earning for their Spartan, they can then go and apply.
They can practice with their new abilities and
Absolutely.
There was a carrot instead of a stick to get those people to keep moving forward with both of those.
And you'll be able to earn up through your ranks or progression system, which we can't talk about too much in detail. Sure. But one thing we did want to clarify a little bit is when we announced the limited edition SKU of Halo 4, we talked about that you'd get early access to something we called specializations. We actually haven't been able to talk about that up until this point. And we wanted to get a chance to actually explain what specializations are. I think there's been a lot of theories about what, how, and why, and what that works. And so, Josh, I think you're the best person to sort of talk about specializations and how those tie into the progression system in Halo 4 as we're, sort of wrapping things up.
Yeah, I mean, basically the way that specializations work is it's kind of like an extension to the level cap once you've maxed out the rank of your Spartan. And so when you achieve maximum rank, you have the ability to re-enlist in a specialized branch of the UNSC based on, you know, your particular play style or preference. And so there's different specializations that sort of correlate to different play styles. So if you're, you know, if you're a player who really likes driving vehicles, if you're a player who really likes sniping, you know, there's a specialization for you. And then as you go through that specialization, once you've enlisted, it's essentially a 10-level extension of your level cap that gives you a number of different rewards for working through those levels. So you have custom emblems or exclusive emblems that you can use for your Spartan. You have exclusive armor skins to customize the way that you look. You have exclusive weapon skins. So nothing that's going to change the function of your weapon, but maybe is going to make your weapon look just a little unique. And then on top of that, you get access to an armor mod that is exclusive to that specialization that gives you, you know, the ability to kind of optimize your Spartan for your particular play style within that specialized branch. And so the hope is that, you know, players, once they achieve that maximum rank, will have these specializations that are available to them that they can continue to work towards and then use those to kind of customize and optimize the Spartans.
And part of the limitation package is that you do have early access to some of these specializations. You're still going to have to put in the work and effort and hours to actually access it.
Yeah, day one, if you're an LE buyer, day one, it's not like you get access to all this stuff that comes from...
To give you a competitive advantage or anything.
There's not that. You still have to go through the max level rank and then go through the enlistment to go through each of these specializations.
Yeah, so... I think that's a pretty good note to end it on, as you know, we're gonna get back to work a little bit and continue the march towards wrapping up Halo 4 and delivering it to everyone this November. So thanks everyone for listening. Thanks everyone for joining me tonight on the podcast. I know we're all very busy, and we'll see you next time.